The following is a seminar on longwire antennas conducted by Fred Vobey during the 1991 National Radio Club Convention on August 31st, 1991.
Last thing we're going to cover here is construction of longwire antennas. Now, many people just think you can throw a wire up and that's about it. In fact, when I was in my pre-teens, I used to take and drive nails in the side of my parents' house and then hang the wire on the nail. Much to my own chagrin, after the siding came down, I found that that was not what you do. More recently, I learned a very valuable lesson when we had an ice storm up in Lima, Ohio. The ice storm took down a good majority of my antennas, including my ham antenna, tri-bander, a couple of TV, FM antennas, and the long wires were pretty well just all mutilated. The thing that I didn't take into account was stress factors on the wire and proper installation. It was a case of DX season was coming up. Throw the wire up onto the tower, get it hooked up as quick as possible, and it worked. It's hard not to put up a wire antenna and not have it work. But there's a few principles that after I got done and looked at the whole thing in the last decade of putting up antennas, that I realize that there are some good application factors that they use in broadcast engineering which can be applied to the DXer. Many of you have seen insulators such as these. These are called the dog bone insulators, long white insulators, and the wire passes through one hole and another wire passes through that hole, and that's how you tension them. There's another version of it. I wish I would have kept a lot of the old porcelain ones, called the egg insulator. This funny little thing is a derivative of that. The porcelain egg insulator, if anyone sees them at ham fests, snap them up, because they're going to be like the glass insulators that you see up on telephone poles and such. They're getting a little rare to find in the art collector's items. This is a plastic piece, which when I started doing some long wire antennas, I had a company put together up in Minneapolis. It's just molded plastic, and it has the same spacing, but the cost of the thing is only approximately 15 cents compared to a buck for one of the porcelain ones. And they're virtually indestructible. You can squeeze them and bend them. It takes a lot to really mangle them up. When you're putting together a long wire, I'll show you two different ways. This is the way that I originally put my long wires antennas together. Passed the wire through the hole once and then wrapped it. Problem is, pull on it, wire popped right off, and especially if it's up in a tree, it's kind of hard to get to then. So the ideal method for putting together a wire antenna is to take the wire, pass it through two times, then wrap it back. And then if you really want to be good at your engineering, you can take and put just a little piece of tape right along the end wires here, so that way if you're working with it, the ends don't stick you and you end up with bloody fingers. I'll pass this one around. Everyone can take a look at it and see how that's constructed. Another factor came in. How many have ever gone to Radio Shack and bought the little shortwave radio kit that they used to sell? I don't know if they still sell it or not. It was like $14 or something like that. It was a little antenna kit. Okay. Well, if you want to build some big antennas, Belden sells a wire which is called 8000, a number very easy to remember. And it's the same identical wire, copper stranded, as they sell in the antenna kits. The only thing is, you can get the whole roll of 1,000 foot for approximately $40, which is a lot easier to go on the pocketbook than buying, say, 10 kits at $12 a piece. So taking the wire and a box of insulators, you can make up some nice antennas. By the way, some of these up here, if anyone wants to take one sample home for just to take a look at, that's fine. I got a whole bunch of them here. The other thing that we found out is when you put the antenna up, copper will stretch. as this goes through seasons, and then as soon as the ice hits it, it weights down the wire. The problem I had was I had all my long wire antennas were about mid-span on the tower, and up above it was my TV, FM, DX antennas. As soon as the ice started to melt, it hit the long wires. That sudden impact just busted the wire. So, came up with an interesting design. This thing, which looks like a stick of dynamite, which Jerry could have used in Youngstown a couple months ago, is actually an insulator, except it does have some resistance to it, which is why this piece was added. The way this is configured is, on the end here you have a small loop, and this piece is attached to a wire, which you run over and tie onto your tower or tree or whatever. This piece goes out here and mounts onto an insulator, or you can mount it onto one of these insulators, either way. This one here is easier to show. Suppose the ice comes down and hits this. Could have the same problem, except this one gives. So the impact is just like a shock absorber on a car. The impact hits, bang, comes right out. And with this, we've been able to find that the antennas have a little bit more survival to them. It's another trick you can do. Is take these things, if you're into beverage antennas, take the insulator off, just make up a little short piece of wire so you can hang it off the bottom, and you got a nice little hook that you can come up and, I don't know if I can do it on this thing or not here, you can just hook it on. Or if you had a tree or something like that, you could hook it on there, or if you really got a lot of the proverbial you-know-whats, you can go on the foam poles, but I would not recommend that. This was designed primarily just for this type of hanging configuration. And then a closed loop, which goes on for a piece of wire. So what we would do in this particular application is pass the wire through two times, if the palsy doesn't get me here. There we go. And then wind it down. And it's always spun as close as you possibly can, and then give it a good hard yank to make sure it tightens up. Just like a hangman's noose, what you want to do is you want to form up real close on the strands. So that one's going to stay. Okay, now that one there would then be tied on to, say, a tree or something like that, leaving this end open. Insulator goes roughly across the end, and your long wire suspended. You can take and put this in any kind of configuration, be it just a straight old long wire. I have seen some guys two here that do not have any insulators on them. You can take them like this, put a screw through the center of them, or just a piece of wire and make a dipole in that configuration. You can put them on a piece of wood top to bottom and be able to feed them as a doublet or whatever type of multi-band antenna you want to put together. Now, the thing that comes to mind most of the time is a lot of people have seen antennas which are put up. There's two types of antennas for long wires you can do in the dipole configuration. One is it's just a straight fashioned dipole. Go into your ham radio handbook, take the mathematical formula. There's several different formulas you can use. I have always worked it out the long way of 300 divided by megahertz times 39.3637 divided by 12. And there's one in the handbook which is just, divided by this number and that's it. Either way, arrive at your figure. And you can make up either a straight dipole of two elements, and then your coax cable comes up, the center conductor goes to one element, and then the shield goes to the other element. And that's basically a dipole. If you want to get ingenious and want to try making what's called a doublet antenna, what you can do is take, you know, something like this, or just straight insulators. It depends upon the real estate. If you're down in the southern part of the United States, I would guess you would not have too much ice. But where I'm at, we get this ice, and when it falls, it always causes problems. We've had ice go through the top of the television station roof and everything else. So had to come up with some kind of idea to make it as protective as possible. Hence the spring insulators. But you can take a ballon, and I don't know, does anyone not know what a ballon is?
I don't know.
Okay. Ballon is a device which will allow you to take a 50-ohm cable off a radio, which is standard, and then transform it from 50 ohms to 300 ohms. And the way the doublet antenna is made is you come out of your radio with coax. If you're just DXing, RG58, the small cable, which is about the size of this stuff here, is okay. If you're running such a thing on an amateur radio and above, say, 100 watts, you might want to go to thicker cable. But doublet antenna comes up with a coax, 50 ohms, connects to a small unit called a ballon. It looks like a tube with a connector on the end of it. Screw your coax onto it. Wire goes out to the mounting point, crosses over, comes back, goes the entire length over to the other mounting point, comes down, and goes into the ballon. And it's 300 ohms. And for you FM guys, that should ring a bell. That's basically how a lot of TV antennas are designed, as doublets. Except they're in Yagi configuration with more multiple elements. But you can design it in that fashion. You can also design a long wire antenna, what they call a T-top, where you're actually coming up to multiple insulators, have three or four multiple wires going out at different lengths and mounted to a common connection. For example, let's just take a couple insulators here, and let's say our feed point comes up here. You can run one wire out 120 foot, one wire out 180 foot. Bring your coax up to it, center conductor, jumper over to this one, then down to this one. And what that will give you is an antenna which is very wide throughout several sections of the band. Now, it depends upon, you know, where you're looking to camp out. Long wires get very, very large when you're dealing with the low part of the AM band. At the top end, 150 foot will usually do for 1600 kilohertz. But when you're down at the low end, and I can't remember exactly what the wavelength is, it's about 580. Yeah, you're talking almost 1,000 foot for a decent antenna down at the low end of the dial. So the type of antenna you're putting together is going to bear a lot on what your real estate looks like, if you're going to have the ability to go out. If you take and move, you can move the ends in. So let's say, for example, I'm at the feed point. One end could go where Bill's sitting over there, and the other end could go over where Al's sitting. As you start to move them closer together, though, you ruin the directionability of the antenna and also the gain factor. Best to keep them 45 degrees out for the best type of reception. As soon as you bring it below 45, you start to ruin the pattern, reduce the gain of the antenna. When you're putting together an antenna, the thing to remember too is typically the size of the wire does not mean too much as far as reception. It does mean a little bit in bandwidth. But typically what you want to do is find a wire which is roughly this length. I would not go with solid wire. Solid wire has a tendency to bend, and after a while will have a weak part in it. It's just like what they say about a chain, the weak end of the wire. Well, it depends. I mean,
on a copper welded antenna. antenna that's been up since 1976.
Yeah. Well, copper well, but I'm talking like, say, ground wire. Standard ground wire is what you'd, you know, go over to, like, I don't know, I think Gray Bar Electric is like the national electrical company around the United States everyone could buy some stuff from. But standard ground wire, I've seen those things come down a lot because after they bend a few times, they develop weak spots, usually right about where the insulator is. That's the weakest part of the antenna. But with this, you can make just about every conceivable type of antenna with a stranded wire. And there's 500 feet of wire on here, and I would guess probably there's about 8 pounds of copper. So that's not too much to ask for putting it up in the air. You don't have too much stress.
What about insulated wire?
Insulated wire will do. You have to watch out what type of insulated wire. What they call the wiring like they would use, say, in a hotel, it's called THHN. Mm-hmm. And it comes in white, black, and, you know, any particular colors if you want to really get a durable wire. You can get it in 12, 10, 14 gauge. 14 gauge is probably, I think that's the next step up from this. The problem with THHN wire is that after the sun hits it for so long, the jacket cracks off.
A PVC? Polyvinyl chloride?
Again, some of that type of wire will crack as well. You have to watch out for what type it is. I've always had good luck in just using straight, bare wire, as long as you're not going over any power lines. Don't make that mistake, because if the wire ever comes down, you're going to be in deep kimchi when it hits.
What about silver plating?
Silver plating, it tends not to really contribute that much to it. Now, if you're going to talk about putting it on paper and looking at it on a spectrum analyzer or that kind of, okay, yeah, anything you can do to help is going to help. But how much are you improving it to your ear and to your receiver? I'm looking at two factors. I'm looking at putting something up. I don't like to climb towers. I will if I have to. But I'm looking at something where if I climb up one day, I can mount the antenna, go downstairs, and rest assured a year, 2 years from now, it's still going to be up there working. So, you know, I want to have what is considered a good quality product, but I don't want to put a lot of money into it. These types of insulators, I'm just going to go ahead and cut a piece off here. These opened type of insulators, you have to be a little careful with, because what happens is you start to bend them over, and you know, the wire just kind of tends to pop right out. On these type, what you want to do is bend it around the insulator as such. Typically, on this type, you do not have to make a double wind. You can if you want to. You don't have to, really. Just for demonstration purposes, we're not going to. Take and bend this end of the wire over till you flatten it down at least 5-6 turns. Now, as I flattened it down, I don't know if you can see this too well, some of the strands are coming up uneven. And that will happen. There's nothing you can really do about that. So just take your old nippy cutters, cut those off. I don't have a pliers in there, so I'll use this tooth puller. And just take and mash the ends down the best I can. And like I said, if you put a piece of tape around there, it's just easier on the fingers, because if you grab a hold of it. No, I got them with this. But if you have a piece of tape around there at the end, that just helps it if you just catch your finger on it, because one strand of wire is about the size of a injection needle, and it will go very easy into your finger and quite deep. And as soon as it hits down about the area of the bone of your finger, you start to notice it very quick, especially if you're up on a tower and you can't let loose of it real quick. Fingernails, yeah, that's a good one too. Okay, so we've made this end. And that's basically how it would sit. And that's gonna hold pretty well.
Like, put some solder on that.
No, not at all. Anything you can do to strengthen it up. Now, second piece, let's just pretend for sake of argument that this thing is 120 foot long or whatever. This one here just passes through this side. If you notice, they're gapped enough. And again, we do the same thing.
Fred, but, is there a reason not to use like nylon to go over to the tree or whatever?
Can. I just find that, you know.
I find it stretches a little bit and gives you a little more cushion.
You can. It depends on what your materials are like. I'm going to be sloppy here and not trim that down because I'm going to do something else in a second. Let's just, sake of argument, just tie this right up here onto our tower, which I'm sure the hotel will like. I was going to say, anyone around tonight want to sit here? We can probably do this whole room into one giant antenna in a couple hours. Just as a side note to this, this is what I used on our television tower over at WLIO-TV. And that was put up 4 years ago, and it's taken several good hits of ice. Now, if you take a look at the mass of ice, when it's on the guy wires and it melts off, the chunk of ice is usually 3 foot long, about 6 inches in diameter, weighs somewhere between 18 to 20 pounds total dead weight. It falls off the tower, and I can't calculate in my head what the speed versus mass is, but it's hauling at a good enough rate that when it hit the roof of the news department, it went through four sheets of CDX plywood and then one of these ceilings and landed 6 feet away from our news director's desk where he was sitting, and he, needless to say, had to go to the laundromat to get his shorts cleaned out. But the ice has hit this type of antenna before, and it has survived. Now that we got our wire up, basically, I should have brought a piece of coax along with me, otherwise, so I don't have to butcher up any more wire here. Center conductor of the wire and the shield. I've seen a lot of hams, and it's a good idea is when you put together the shield of the antenna, is to trim it out so the inside conductor is about 3 inches out. And then you leave about an inch of shield. Then why take a piece of like wire like this, wind it around the shield, solder it, and then tape it off. You can take the shield and just kind of break the braid apart and use it as one piece of wire and go right to the antenna. That is permissible. But it depends on how big your antenna system is going to be. We're talking about broadcast band and low band amateur radio, and you know, you're talking about a pretty big antenna. So let's just suppose here we've got our coaxial cable coming up the side here, and you got the piece coming out, coax, and then the center conductor. Center conductor just comes right out, and you bring it up about 2 inches away from the end of the insulator and just wind it on. And that would go right back to your cable. And as Al said, it's very permissible to solder it. And I'll tell you something else that's not too bad of an idea to do. And that's either to get some stuff called Dow Tub Caulk. There's a couple other brands that they sell. It's comes in a toothpaste tube, and it's clear, and you squeeze it on, and then just, you know, kind of smear it around. After 2 hours or so, it hardens real rubbery hard. Just protects it and keeps it from oxidizing. If the wire, like you see this wire here, it's if I turn the roll up there and pull down some strands, you can see it's a lot shinier. This here happens to be dull just because it's been sitting outside for a long time. But they'll keep if the wire gets dirty, who cares? It's not going to hurt it. But you got to make sure the connections stay clean. So this goes back to the center conductor, and if we were to duplicate this on the other side, you'd have the same configuration going out to an insulator. Now let's take and treat the other end here. Take a spring hanger with an insulator. I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm not going to do two winds like I should do. Wind it around. And this piece here would clip onto another supporting structure. And there's your basic long wire. Again, imagining that's 120 foot. So, this whole configuration here, I would say, if you're to use the entire 1,000 foot of wire, the insulators that you see here, you can probably get off real easy for probably about under $55 tops. You can arrange it in any particular type of configuration. This is just a standard long wire. You can come off with two wires, three wires. After four wires, you start to get a little bit of patterning into your signal, and it might not be that good for DXing. But you can do multiple elements. You can do like the hams do and purchase coils, which go in the middle of the wire, which actually tunes the antenna for different frequencies. Something which I've had a lot of luck with is taking and mounting these. Let's just say, for example, I have three of these. Mount one, two, three, and then tie all three to a common bond. What that does is it increases the bandwidth and in some cases helps the gain. Not always. The gain is dependent upon the resonant length. And again, that's a figure I could give you a couple numbers right off the top of my head, but it really doesn't mean anything as far as, you know, the whole broadcast band. For example, I just remember, because I worked at a station up in Monroe, Michigan, that was an AM station, 560 on the dial is roughly 410 feet. You get up on the top end of the dial, it's about 151 foot per quarter wavelength. So you can cut it for basically a good portion of the band, and I would recommend if you're making an antenna for broadcast band, try to cut it for around the low end, say around 650, seems to be pretty decent. Because as it goes over, as the wire becomes larger than a quarter wavelength, half wavelength, or even a wavelength, then you start getting into the beverage antenna theory. And with that, you open up a whole new can of worms as far as how the antenna reacts. Now, as I mentioned about beverage antennas, you can get into... Should actually leave this and let them clean it up. Maybe they'd try to figure out what the hell that is.
Medieval
torture. Yeah, I was going to say, well, you know, it's a way of subduing the SWAT team, I guess. Anyways, those hangers and everything could be utilized in a configuration for a beverage antenna. Now, how many have heard about beverage antennas? They are very good for DX. The only drawback to a beverage antenna seems to be the fact that if you want to change the directionability, it's kind of hard to bring 1,500 foot of wire in and then go off into another location. Big reel.
Just build your whole place on a huge turntable.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now, I'll tell you a trick that I saw some guy do, and it's one of those things where I'm sure everyone has done, is you see something that is performed and you think to yourself, why the hell didn't I think of that? Something for beverage antennas, which is very easy and cheap to do, go to Kmart and get one of those little spoolers they use for garden hose. You can wind the wire right up on that, just set the spool down, grab a hold of the end and start walking. You walk out to your location, have your antenna, have your fun, get done, just walk back to the spool, start cranking. Wire just comes right back in. And you can leave the wire right on the spool and just connect right onto it. The spools I've seen, they run about $12.95, and they're made of plastic, and they're more than sufficient. And of course, being plastic, they're insulated, so you can just leave the wire right on there and just clip on to whatever wire you have left. You can have multiple spools. Take a 1,000 foot of wire and, you know, make two spools up of 500 and cascade them. Makes a lot of sense, especially if you're going to borrow somebody's property and suddenly you see the pickup truck coming down the street and you want to get off there real quick. You can spool it up real quick and get the hell out. The insulators, again, going back on here, what you can do with these is take and put your dog bone insulators on there. And as you're going out with your wire, pass the end of the wire through, then you can hang them from trees or whatever, foam poles. Like I said, I don't really recommend that. I think there are in some states violations of electrical code for hanging other wires on foam poles, and they can get you in trouble. But at least you can keep it off the ground. Now with a beverage antenna, as long as you're using insulated wire, there's really no reason you can't just put it on the ground. Yes, up in the air will help. I've seen some guys take wood stakes and just pound wood stakes in at 20-foot intervals and take a staple gun and just pop a staple, you know, around the wire at the top and just go out. You can do that. But realistically, an insulated wire laying on the ground is not going to hurt it that much.
Would it affect it by wrapping it around those stakes? You know, maybe 5 or 10 turns, the next one 5 or 10 turns?
Anytime you wrap a wire, you start to form what's called a choke, and you start to cut down on the AC signal properties, and that's what RF is an AC signal.
Okay.
In practice, I don't know. You might get lucky, and it might not cause that much of a problem. Other times, it can. Typically, you want to keep it as straight, and I'm sure there's guys like Frank that have done an extensive amount of DXing on beverages and can tell you some of the tricks, like terminating the outer end, terminating the inner end.
Actually, I haven't been using true beverages. I've just been using just straight long wires without termination or anything.
Yeah. There are some guys I know that have kept the spools like in their trunk of their car, and like when, you know, you get out into the wild open spaces on the prairie, you can drag that thing out and DX a little bit and bring it back in. Yeah. And, you know, if you really want to be clever, you can take your car radio and get a Motorola pin plug, solder on a connector, go out to your spool. That way all you have to do is just reach on your dash, pull it off your regular antenna, plug your beverage antenna is on it, and use an alligator clip on the wire, you're off to the races. It's the old cheap and dirty principle. So, I guess in conclusion, the best way of designing a long wire is, first of all, to hit the theory books. See if you can find a formula that you can work with easy. Like I said, there are several different types of formulas out there that you can work, depending upon what you want to accomplish. I used to use the long method just because that's the way my grandfather, who was been in this business since Noah was a pup, you know, that's the way he did it, and I just kind of continued on. I know that the ham radio handbook has another formula. It's something like 792 or 82 or something. I don't even remember the formula, to be honest with you. 795? What, 492? Bowker's out here giving me coaching. It's 492, and you can work that on a calculator and figure out exactly what the lengths are, or it's, if you're not going to be transmitting on it, there's no reason just to, you know, if you've got 500 feet of property, string it out there 500 feet. Go for it. Yeah?
What happens if you, I live in a neighborhood where the property lines are all close. So what happens if you go out 500 feet to a tree or a pole and take one of these insulators and then make a turn and go 90 degrees another 500 feet?
I don't know if I'd want to turn it.
The only way that I could get 1,000 feet.
You might want to try going out, coming back, and going out again.
But then now there's only getting one direction, right? By going out and then turning 90 degrees.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, that if you go and turn 90 degrees, now if you can, theoretically, if this was the center point, you go out, turn 90 degrees here, and then take it out here and go 90 degrees there, that is going to produce, if these two angles are roughly the same length, it should be as close to non-directional as possible. That's if you want non-directional.
Okay, I wonder, okay.
If you want strictly directional, the two legs would go straight out, and this area here would be the receiving pattern.
Right.
The sides where the wires are pointing are going to be the least received area. That is until you get over a wavelength. Then again, you get into beverage antenna theory and you start to pick up radiation from the side. And the thing is that you're going to find out when constructing a lot of these antennas is that over a bunch of frequencies, they will react very much different. And that is because as the frequency is increased or decreased, the characteristic of the antenna changes as well. Roughly, if you look at broadcast antennas, the majority of the AM stations which are constructed with vertical antennas are a 1/4 wavelength high. And the reason for that is at 1/4 wavelength high, you're at 50 ohms impedance, which the transmitter just loves. And second thing is, the radiation pattern. Suppose this was a tower here. The signal is radiated off the tower at roughly a 30 degrees, what they call takeoff angle. It comes off in a lobe like that. Again, we're looking at it from the side. So if you look at it from the top, even though it's a non-directional antenna, it's a big donut, basically. But you have a 30-degree lobe coming off here. As the tower height is heightened up to 5/8, the lobe flattens out and drops down to roughly about 21 to 22 degrees. So if you get up above a wavelength, then you start bringing it up over and multiple lobes which are coming off. And like I said, that's why the beverage antenna is so good, is that you're getting more directionability off the antenna at the ends. At the same time, it has a tendency to cut off a lot of the local stations. The ground waves will tend to affect, the ground wave reception will be affected by the sky wave, and you will null a little bit of it out. Any questions?
What would be an ideal, reasonably acceptable antenna system if you put multiple antennas various directions? What would be like an ideal
for
system?
Broadcast band?
Yeah, for BCB.
Broadcast band, because you're dealing with a frequency where one end of the dial, 1600, is 150 foot for a quarter wave. And at the other end of the dial is like 460 or so. The best thing you can do is try to get as much wire on there as possible. 500 feet would be ideal. Now, again, the thing is at 1600, if you have 500 feet of wire on there at 1600, you are going to notice a little bit of strange characteristics to the antenna. And it's not impossible to see your local station, say like where I live, I've got a 1600 in Tiffin. When I put up the long wire, I just naturally assumed, gain is going to be all the way across the band. It doesn't. I start picking up the 1600 in Peru, Indiana, over top of Tiffin, Ohio. And at nighttime, it's WWRL out of New York. So, I ruined my local 1600, but who cares? They're in the logbook anyways. Yeah, no big loss. As far as programming, no big loss either. Anyways, I would say if you cut the antenna for right around 650, 660, 670, that is probably the ideal. You're going to get the best of both worlds. But don't be afraid to experiment around with different lengths and also multiple pieces of wire. Maybe one wire that's 80 foot long, another piece that's 150, another piece which is 250 or something.
And when
makes
pa-
K cat's whisker. Think of it like a cat's whisker. Okay. It all ends at one spot, but it all branches out to other spots.
When you're talking about parallel, would be one line going back and forth, or separate ones connected at one point?
Well, in this example here, if we were to take and make this into a doublet, we'd be having four pieces like this. You'd have one piece coming off here, your antenna element. Then here it would jump up. I should do it like this. There's our first piece. Second piece jumps up to here, comes through, jumpers over to the third piece, which is on the other side. It goes out, comes down, comes back in, and that's where the shield is.
It's not just one piece of wire that's going back and forth.
No, you can splice them. You can splice them. If any of you happen to have a chance to see VOA's property and take a look, if you can get a pair of binoculars, which are good enough, and can take a look at their curtain arrays, you'll notice it's all splice. Except what they're doing, because of the power, it's a lot thicker wire, and they're using clamps on it, which, because of the power rating of the transmitters. But you could do that. You could just go straight out as a dipole. If you want to be a little radical, you can take and make, like what you were talking about, having a more omnidirectional. There's nothing to say you can't make one go out to the east, one go out to the west. Take your wire and join them. That's perfectly permissible. Your receiver will not see that much differences enough to, cause any problems. Transmitting? No, I don't know if I want to transmit on something like that. Impedance characteristic might be off. Reception should be just fine. Any questions?
What about grounding?
Grounding, typically, the best way of doing it, especially if it's an air-mounted antenna, meaning up on a tower, up on a tree, or anything, what I would do with that is take and bring your coax down to where the entrance point is to the building. At that point, run it through a T-connector, or just a plain old SO239 barrel connector. Drive in an 8-foot stake at that point, and then have some kind of clamp that you can clamp the PL259, SO239 onto the pole. Then that way, in theory, lightning should come down, see the pole, that's the shortest path to ground, right back in.
So the only thing that's coming through then is the inner wire?
No, the inner and shield would go into the building as well. It's just that you're going to stop it right there at the outside of the house. You can use these little things called blitz bugs. I don't know if you've seen those things. They're a little connector used for lightning attenuation. My personal feeling is if it gets hit, it's going to cause some damage.
Disconnected.
And, a lot of... A lot of guys just take and put the connector, lay it on the desk. I don't know if I agree with that so much. If the lightning hits it, lightning is going to take the path of least resistance. So if it comes in the house and it cannot find anywhere to get out, it's going to come out of that PL259 connector, and it might just jump over to a AC socket. If you're going to put it into a jar, I've heard a lot of guys talk about that, putting the end into a glass jar. That's fine, except stuff some foam or something in there, too, to keep a little bit of air dielectric properties so that it does not have a tendency just to jump out of the jar as well. Because if it's in the jar and it's going to go across the room, it's going to take another 4 inches to get out of the jar, too. So put something on top of that. But again, in some of these lightning hits with these antennas, any long wire antenna, if it hits it, it's going to cause some damage. Best thing to do is just disconnect your rig and, Try to construct it in the least deadly manner. That's for all antennas. I mean, we get an average of 5 hits on our TV tower at WLIO a year. And you go up on the tower and take a look at the feed points of the antennas, and you get to the point where the wire has been hit so many darn times that you can't twist apart these strands. The strands are melded together. Or as they come into the side of the building where the insulators are, I've seen it where it actually blows the coax right off the the side of it because there's so much current there. The lightning strike will cause probably 9/10 of the damage. The other 1/10 is caused by what's called the EMF, the backlash of the voltage off the tower. Works like a transformer. You hit it once, downstroke comes down, there's a backstroke, and the field, magnetic field, expands away. And in many situations, that can hurt your equipment just as much as the actual lightning hit. Although the lightning hit's more impressive.
Does it actually help to pick up signal using a ground system?
Yes. Your ground system will not only help you on your signal characteristics, but will also help you get rid of a lot of your noise. You'll be listening on the low end of the dial, and you might hear a lot of buzz and hiss and stuff. Plug the ground on, disappears completely. Oh, okay, we got some lightning outside. Anyone want to take the copper spool? Let's go out and play.
One other thing that you might mention, if you got your last DX News and saw Dallas Langford's article concerning noise-reducing transformers, they work.
Mm-hmm.
So they work. If you're in a noisy environment, particularly in an urban environment, they work.
Well, that's it for most of our talks here. We've got a videotape that I guess we're going to be playing here. If anyone wants to take home a black insulator just to play around with it, there's a box of them up here. And
black insulators are beautiful insulators.
I've heard that before. And there's some wire here if you want to try them.
Do you really need an insulator, though?